used to say that, well, how much, what does it take to build an airplane? And it says, well, it's about 1.5 wives. You know? But one thing we did find and learn is that only about 10% of the people that buy a set of plans and buy materials and decide to build an airplane, only about 10% of the people end up finishing it and flying it. So it is something that is very difficult, but we found that these people could build it much faster and we thought safer than the T-18. And that was essentially the comparison.
Long Easy came along partially because of what people were doing, experimenting, putting larger engines, trying to go faster in the original design, and that was sort of your way of trying to guide the community.
There were actually three different sizes of those airplanes. The airplane we brought here in 1975, and Dick tried to fly it here nonstop from Mojave. But he had some high oil temperature and did a precautionary landing east of here. And then we went out to try to do a world distance record and shelled out the engine. And he did a dead stick into Green Bay. And then John Monette offered to give us one of his Volkswagen engines, and he flew to Chicago or something, or Milwaukee, I guess, and brought us back an engine, and we replaced it right here on the flight line. There wasn't a repair tent then. Right there on a flight line, we took out and threw away this junk oil all over it, Volkswagen engine. We put his in there, and we wrenched it all together, and we started it up, and to our surprise, it ran. And I remember going out in between air show acts and talking them into me doing a first flight on this new installation in the pattern, because the next day was the last day of Oshkosh, and we wanted Dick to set the world distance record for the C-1A class at Oshkosh. And I took off and I flew two patterns around here, and I jimmied with a mixture and found out that it's kind of working, and I landed. And that evening, we filled it up, and at dawn, Dick took off to set a world's distance record. And that's the only flight that was ever done, probably 7 or 8 minutes on this new engine from Monette.
Need to tell him about... Let's see, two things happened. I had the distinction of landing with the nose gear retracted for the very first time. And I still have the scar on my thumb. Real quick, I came in and landed, and we had a ball, circulating ball, very
low
friction.
That was a Chino, right?
Yeah. That was here.
Oh, what?
Yeah, it's here. So I put the landing gear down, and then I had to go around. So the time that we flew an extra pattern, it kind of vibrated over, so it wasn't over center anymore. And I came in and landed and put the nose down, and all of a sudden the nose started falling, and this little handle started spinning. So the normal reaction is reach up and stop the handle. Well, I got a big scar on my thumb to this day. Another thing, too, remember the throttle was hooked up backwards?
That was on the Voyager. Oh, you're saying the Monette throttle was hooked up backwards?
Well, the geometry of the carburetor that we used was different than the other one. And the only way we could do it simply was that the throttle was backwards, and we had a discussion whether that was safe or not.
Well, if I went out during the air show and successfully flew it around the pattern and landed without killing myself, it was safe by definition. Remember, I was never as good a pilot as you. You just copied it on the Voyager, right?
How many years ago was that? Now, we hooked it up that if you had the throttle all the way forward, that was idle. And if you wanted to take off, you had to pull it back.
Right. Like a lawnmower.
Yeah, like a lawnmower. And the discussion was whether I'd get that mixed up, and I was trying to tell him that, no, I could handle that. And I think you did, too, because you did the test flight.
So you then took off the final day of Oshkosh and actually did set the record.
Well, it was between Oshkosh and the tower was our turn point in a little town called Menominee. And we shuttled back and forth, I don't know, most of the day and broke whatever the current record was. But I think that was our first taste of breaking records. And good gravy, look what happened.
Now, I'll tell you, I was looking forward to being able to sell plans for Very Easy because I reasoned correctly that would get me out of my financial depression. I had a family of four, and I was selling plans for the Very Big One. Right, Mike? And if you sell, maybe it was $52. I know the original sets were $27, but if you sell a set of plans for $27 or $52, and that guy calls you 25 years later still and needs some help. But anyway, I was in a rush to do that. Here's what happened, though. In 75, after Dick set the record, the next day I flew the Very Easy home to Mojave. And I had an engine failure of the Manette engine on my way home. And I reasoned that this was no airplane to have a lot of engine failures because it wasn't a low landing speed like the Fly Babies and so on of the day. And I said, this airplane is not safe for the home builders. So I spent another year before I put out plans. And in doing that, I scaled the airplane up by about 15% on the linear scale, which was quite a bit bigger on area, so that it could use a Continental 0200 engine. Or a Lycoming 108 if you didn't have a starter or a generator. And that's the one that we put out to the home builders. Later, in 1979 now, I recognized that this was really a big deal. There was a lot of these airplanes out there, and I felt compelled. And also, we were running out of 0200s on the used market. And I thought, you know, people really want to use Lycomings. I want the airplane big enough so that you could put a starter and a generator on a Lycoming engine. And it ought to have some baggage space and a lot more range. And because of that, I did something that I didn't really want to do at the time, but I spent another year doing a major improvement to the Very Easy before moving on to other exciting things like the Defiant and the Solitaire and whatever. So the Long Easy initially flew to Oshkosh in 1979, and it was a terrible airplane. It had Very Easy wings with a big center section to where they're out further. It had a lot of wing sweep. And to save the complexity of the cable that pulls the rudders out, I put a rudder on the nose that was hooked to a rudder bar. And the airplane had very poor stall characteristics. It was lousy. And we got it home realizing that after Oshkosh, actually before we got it home, we realized this thing needs major improvement. So my big focus after Oshkosh on 1979 was what we call the Dash 23 version, and long easy with only 23 degrees of sweep, not 31 and so on. And that became a wonderful flying airplane. And shortly thereafter, in a few months' time, Mike and Dick decided to build them for themselves. And they did an interesting way of doing that. They felt it was a lot more efficient if you built two of one thing, like you built two wings, because you're up on the learning curve. So they would take major sections of the airplane, like the center section spar or the wing or the vertical fin. They would build two of them and then flip a coin to see who gets which one on their airplane.
I remember that very well.
And so they ended up building together. And when you build two of them, knowing that one of those might be yours, you're going to put good quality workmanship in both of them.
So which one of those two airplanes flies better?
My one's still flying. His doesn't fly anymore. You know, I have a slightly different memory of that, Bert.
That's funny.
I came to work for you, and I knew how to build a very big one, and so I was the very big and builder support guy. And then Bert said one day, you know, I've got other things to do here, and I'm answering too many questions on the very easies, so I need you to build a very easy, and then you can support the very easy guys. So we started out building a very easy. So I finished a canard in the elevators, and started working on some of the bulkheads, and Bert came out and said, this is dumb. We've already got two very easies. What we need is something better. Let's look and see what everyone wants. You know, wants starters on board, they want generators, and a bigger, longer range, all that stuff. That's how I got my work. So the reason that the canard on a very easy and the canard on a long easy are exactly the same is because I had already completed the very easy one. And Bert said, well, we can't waste this. That was a lot of work. And so he designed the long easy using a very easy canard. And I thought that was pretty amazing that he could take an existing thing and just adapt it to another airplane.
It's called being efficient, I think.
I'd forgotten about that. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, so that was a tremendous experience for me. And then I ended up being the guy that supported very easies, long easies, and very big ones. And so Bert was free to do whatever he needed to do. And so it really was it's been an unbelievable relationship, I think.
What was it like working for Bert in those days?
Well, you know,
was he a good boss?
He was an excellent boss. Very generous boss. And I thought, good-natured kind of a fellow. But if you crossed him, it didn't work very well. Now, if I tried to argue, that didn't always work.
All four of your family, the two boys, actually lived in RAF.
That's right.
Initially.
Sally and
in a water bed and with a 5-gallon water heater.
Right. To take a shower for four people. A 5-gallon water heater. Yeah. And then Dick came along and we did some solar collecting stuff to heat up the water so we'd have longer showers.
So we're approaching the early 80s. There comes a point where you realize you're going to kind of move on to the next phase. So Rutan Aircraft is phased out and you begin Scaled Composites, which is where Doug comes on board.
Well, it wasn't that order. We ran Rutan Aircraft Factory for 3 years after Scaled started. And during those 3 years, I would scamper back and forth to buildings that were 50 feet apart. And in one building, we were building what we were doing with home builds, and we were building the initial parts of the Voyager. In the other building, we were building the Beach Starship prototype. What people don't realize is the Beach Starship was initially a Rutan Aircraft Factory project, originally a Rutan Aircraft Factory contract, and we started the preliminary design under RAF. And then when we founded Scaled and decided that this will be a company that doesn't work with the public, and RAF will be a company that continues to work directly with the public, we transferred the contract over and Scaled took on the Starship program. But for 3 years, and those 3 years was 82 to 85, that was the period in which we built the Voyager, too. So Dick and Gina and Bruce Evans and Mike and Sally were all working like hell trying to build the Voyager, and I was the president of that company. I was also the founder and president with my first engineer, Doug Shane, and we were building Starship, and we built an airplane for Colin Chapman of Lotus Motor Cars, and pretty soon thereafter we built a crop duster and so on. So I had these two companies and a thought that I could run both of them.
Well, you did for several years.
Just three.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the Voyager. I'm sure most people know the story of the genesis of the idea for Voyager on the napkin. Is that really how it happened?
No, not at all.
What's the true story?
The legend.
The legend, okay.
I don't know if this is how it's reported in Gina's book, but the legend is that the initial drawing of the Voyager was on a napkin in a restaurant. Actually, I had been designing configurations for Voyager, making calculations. The napkin at the overpass restaurant was my passing on information about this airplane that I had a preliminary design, passing that on to Dick and Gina and showing them what I had been working on and telling them that, why don't you guys do this? Because I don't want to be the designer of an aerobatic airplane. I felt that was too high of a liability exposure. I had made a decision that RAF would not do an aerobatic airplane because such a large percentage of them crashed. But he wanted to run his own company with Gina that would develop kits and sell them for aerobatic airplanes, and I was going to be the designer. So I essentially kind of teased them, well, why don't you try this instead? And so I showed them what this was, and that was the napkin from the overpass.
Aha.
Yeah, I remember what you said that day. Yeah, you want to do all those other things, but I got this other little idea, and it won't take too long. And when you finish this thing, then you can go on with something more meaningful in your life.
I said that?
How'd that work out for you?
Wait a minute. I was lecturing you on meaningful of life, and you're 5 years older? I was an arrogant little guy, I guess, huh?
Like Doug just said, Dick, how did that work out for you?
You know, when we were at the overpass restaurant, and he showed us that and happened to mention that he thought because of carbon fiber, the availability of that material, that maybe a transglobal unrefueled flight was really possible. And, it took a handful of minutes for that to sink in to what the meaning for that would be. The historical significance. And then another thing was the shock of the fact that this may be arguably the last major milestone in atmospheric flight. And then I looked at him and I thought, wait a minute, you think that us three, we could actually do something like that? And is it in its historical significance? And when I got to thinking about that, I didn't even ask him how difficult it would be or if we could prove it. There was no skepticism. And I thought, well, if that little kid can design it, I know damn well I can fly it.
Another thing I remember about that first year and a half of Voyager, which was spent by Dick and Gina out raising funds for the program, was it about a year and a half, Dick? During that whole time, he worked with a large variety of different possible funding sources. And usually these funding sources, they bring in experts to check to see if this really is engineered okay and if it's feasible. And I don't remember ever having to prove that it would go around the world. And I remember being really relieved because I wasn't very sure about it myself.
There's the confidence of the designer, right?
Well, I didn't tell him that.
Oh, okay. You do mention the fundraising, the famous story of someone sending in a rather meager donation with the note that said, please don't laugh, I didn't have lunch today. But that really kind of goes to the essence of the grassroots support that the Voyager Project had.
Gene and I, we had the idea that, we thought, and rightfully so, that this flight would generate an incredible amount of publicity for whoever's product that they wanted to sell. And the thing is, we couldn't, so that's what we focused on, the big buck things, American Express and some other things, and high roller guys like Ross Perot and Baron Hilton. But then it dawned on us one day that we were being used real bad by some company that wanted to have something interesting in a big convention that they were having. And so they says, boy, there's a lot of people out here, and they will all fund this thing, so come out and tell them about it. So we were just like fish on a hook. We went running around trying to do all these things. And then finally we realized that those
people,
they were just using us. And it really made me upset. And then Gina had the idea, And another thing, too, we found that all the rich people, they would never tell you no. They would say, hey, what a great idea. Why don't you ask Jake over there? He'd love to do it. And so like little idiots, we'd run over to Jake and keep running down the, you know, the blind rat hole. The only person I thought that really treated us right was Ross Perot. And he listened to our proposal. He had some questions. We gave him the answer. And he had the character and the ethics enough to call us up and tell us that he wasn't able to do that. And instead of hanging you on all the time, which is really very cruel, in the middle of it, we were really poor. And, well, anyway, after this big high roller thing really ripped us off, we went down to the Fullerton Airport. They had a little party with a, not a party, but a little organization there of really blue-collar, grassroots people that just love to fly little airplanes, not the big high rollers that we were working with. And all of a sudden, we got some donations of a few dollars. And Gene and I, we'd go around to these places, and we'd give talks, and we'd take these posters, and we'd leave the posters out front and give our talk. But then before we could get back there to sell them, as the people left, somebody would tackle us on the stage, and they'd go down, and we'd get back there, and they'd all gone. They thought they were free. But then we realized, you know, this is not going to be done by some high roller organization. It's going to be done by the grassroots of the spirit of who we are. And the spirit of who we are, all the people that are sitting in this theater tonight. And then we changed our focus totally. Other than the fact that we were offered a lot of money. Okay, three things real quick. One of them, the Japanese wanted to do it, but they wanted us to fly down the main street of Tokyo and call it the Isuzu Voyager. Of course, that wasn't going to fly. And the other one was the guy from Caesar's Palace. And he says, wow, that's really a great idea. I want to sponsor it, but you got to take off from Las Vegas. And I says, well, I don't know if McCarran's long enough. He says, no, no, not McCarran. You have to take off and land from the Caesar's parking lot. So that didn't work. And then the narcotics industry offered us almost a check right there for $2 million for the primary rights to that. And we told them that the whole industry didn't have enough money to put a cigarette on the side of the airplane. And we went home that night with not enough money to replace worn-out tennis shoes or a decent meal in the refrigerator.